Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. How are you guys? And girls, I should say.
Hey, ladies.
Girls.
Alex, filling in for our extraordinaire host, Eddie Pence, who I don't even know what he's doing. Do you know what he's doing tonight?
I thought he might be out of town because it was a long weekend. I think maybe his family's in town.
That bastard. No, I'm just kidding. So, how was your weekend? You had a long weekend, just like I did, I'm sure.
I always have a long weekend. I'm unemployed.
Oh, so you must be an artist.
It's a very, very long weekend for me. Since 2011.
What? Really?
I'm kidding. No, actually, since March, I was able to stop bartending for good.
What were you bartending?
I was bartending at a place in Silver Lake, which I will not name because they fired me, so the hell with them.
We'll call them the Ugly Rooster. How about that?
They're terrible.
Just to keep it in line with the Wake Up Hollywood theme. Well, did you do anything fun over the weekend, or did you just sit around and just pick your butt?
Yeah, just pretty much pick my butt. That's pretty much it. I drank a little bit yesterday. That was about it. Watch some college ball.
Dude, I'm so happy that college football started.
Yeah.
Well, for me, the summer months from like July, August, September, that's like the most boring part of sports. Because all there is, I mean, I like baseball, but I don't love baseball.
Nobody likes baseball.
Thank you. Like, it's such a boring game to watch. But there's no football. There's no basketball. Like,
there's no hockey.
There's no hockey. There's no, like, even tennis. Like, I like Wimbledon, like, you know.
Yeah.
But during the summer months, nothing.
Like, this year we had the World Cup for a little while.
That was cool. That was cool. Yeah, yeah, that took up some time. But as soon as America lost, it was like, who cares?
Who do you root? Are you a Raiders fan? Because I know you're.
I'm actually a 49ers fan. If I had to choose a team, but my big two teams are the USC Trojans for football because I went to school there.
Dang, and,
yeah,
dang.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I just had to try.
And the Lakers? No, absolutely. You have to. You have to have. You know. You have to have a little fun here.
Oh, the Lakers.
See, I read
Here's
your mind.
Nice piece of shit.
So you don't like the Lakers and you live in Los Angeles?
I'm from Miami.
That's right.
I was born and raised in Miami.
Oh, my. We can all make sure.
Yeah. Why didn't you just cut that?
All right. Sorry about that. I got a little excited.
What a rookie.
Rookie mistake.
So you must love the Heat. You love the Dolphins.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah. Big Dolphins fan.
Are you a University of Miami fan as well?
Until last night. That was brutal.
That's what happens
in
college
football.
Here's
a nice piece of shit.
You know what? Growing up watching the Canes being the U.
Oh, yeah.
And being the most dominant college, you know.
You were spoiled.
Yeah. And now watch them just struggle like the way they're struggling now.
But that's
so
what happens
painful.
With every program. It's like USC in the 2000s were dominant. And then as soon as we got caught with Reggie Bush, I mean, you know, that's what just happens.
You know, it's why Notre Dame now is back, you know, kind of making a splash in the collegiate world. So it gives me hope that we can kind of...
But Alabama is like... Notre Dame's making a comeback, but Alabama, I don't know if they're just really good at cheating and nobody knows, but they've been dominant like for the last like 15 years.
I hate Nick Saban. As a Miami fan, I hate Nick Saban.
Dude, he's a great coach, but I can't stand Alabama. I hate Alabama. So I'm happy that my Trojans kicked ass. I think they won by like 40 points, something crazy like that. So it was a little bit... ridiculous. I was very happy. This weekend was a lot of good sports.
Yeah. By the way, thanks for having me back.
Of course.
Filling in for Eddie. I mean, last time we had our own engineer. Now I come like 30 minutes early and I got to do this whole like 4-year course.
I know.
Sound engineering.
I actually came late because I'm producing a new artist. This new, I won't even say who it is yet. But And he scheduled a guitar session today because today was the only day I could do it. So it went over a little bit, and I was like flooring it to get here. I'm just happy I made it on time, but that was half the battle. But I appreciate you coming early. Dude, you got a tutorial on how this whole place works. You got to see that we got water now. The facilities are nice.
This is fancy.
This is living water. The life. Living the good life.
You can't see this at home, but this is some really fancy water.
So, Alex, you've been kind of like roaming around the comedy clubs.
Yeah, right now, actually, I'm working closely with the John Lovitz Comedy Network.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I'm producing original content for them, for their, you know, for their website and for their vodcast. And sorry.
That's all right.
And we just launched our first, we're doing a fantasy football vodcast every... We're doing our first fantasy... I just started my own fantasy football vodcast every Wednesday. So
that's cool.
That's a lot of fun. I get to talk about football, and now...
Dude, this is my favorite time of sports.
Well, now my girlfriend can't yell at me, because I'm like, honey, I'm doing this for work. Come on. I got to set my lineups and get ready for the show.
Yeah. I'm doing research.
I'll go to your mother's later. Come on.
Yeah, like the fall with college football and the NFL and basketball, that's like the best. And then as soon as the Super Bowl ends... It's kind of like sad because college football's done and football's done, you know, and then all we have is basketball and hockey. And then once those are done, for me, I'm like, oh, man, I got nothing. I'm not going to pay attention to sports for a little bit, you know.
Yeah, the whole summer, like TV for me sucks in the summer. Everything's reruns and...
Well, the movies are good, though. Everything's balanced.
Yeah, okay, but I only see the movies like once.
Are you seeing a lot of your friends' kids going back to school? Like everybody's... crazy about back to school right now?
No, but I have noticed today, like, the roads were, like, there was no traffic. Like, there were no kids around. It was, like, I work out of Universal City Walk.
Right.
So it was just, like, no traffic. There's nobody anywhere. They had the, you know, the what we call the Mexican water park, you know, that little thing where the water shoots out from the,
yes,
from the floor?
Yes,
there was
yes.
no one there.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Usually great. There's always somebody. I met John Lovitz. I did a show, you know, the Heidi and Frank show?
The
radio show. So I did a concert for them, and they had a huge event at the John Lovitz Comedy Club, and he was there, and like I got to meet him, and he was totally like how he is in every movie. Like, hey, yeah. How you know?
Yeah, 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 that's the ticket. Yeah, I don't like it.
So do you get to work with them constantly, or is he just kind of like a name and just kind of in and out?
He's in and out. I think I've seen him like a handful of times since I've been there. I work closely with the other owner, Mark Short,
okay,
who's a awesome guy. I love him to death. But yeah, he's kind of like, hey, you know, I come in, tell a joke, and then he goes. He's constantly touring too. He's
right.
He's a working comic. He's probably one of the top.
I've never seen his live stuff. Is it good?
You're lucky.
I'm glad you were honest, even though you work.
He's a nice piece of shit.
That's what I assume, because I never really think he's that funny in some movies that he's in, too.
No, I mean, he's a character. He's a character of himself, and he tells, like, punny jokes.
Right.
You
right.
know? So it's... But he's John
punny, Lovitz. Punny, but not so funny jokes.
Punny, but not so funny, yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen him. Do they get a lot of big comedy acts going through there?
Yeah, I mean...
Russell Peters there a long time
ago. Yeah, Russell Peters. Oh, I love Russell Peters.
He's
one
great.
Of my favorite guys.
He's one of my favorites as well.
Right now they're going through, they're really pushing the studio. So they're using the comedy stage right now to record comedians to put on the website, like to kind of like
oh, that's cool.
to promote the comedians through the website and get them out into...
That club, that used to be BB King's.
Yeah.
That club has always just had like a dark cloud over it. It's like a hard club, A, to work in... B, to get people to, because you have to pay like $8 or $10 for parking, and then you're in the club and you have to do the minimums. I mean, every club kind of has the same thing, but I always feel like going to City Walk is a little bit of an extra push.
Yeah, for people who live in Los Angeles, I mean, it's like going, they have a nightclub across
right,
the hall.
Right.
And like, why would you go to a nightclub at Universal
City Walk? Yeah.
You live in LA. If you really want a nightclub, you go down to, you know, Beverly Hills or Hollywood or.
But they want it there for the tourists, I assume.
For the tourists. But the tourists don't go to nightclubs.
Right. They're just like, oh, let's go to the Hard Rock Cafe.
Let's go to Applebee's, guys. let's get something for the
kids.
I
always think like City Walk, like what they want to do now on Hollywood, on Sunset Boulevard, they basically want to turn it into a City Walk. I don't know if you've heard about all this.
No, stuff. I haven't.
They're tearing down the House of Blues. They're tearing down the Whiskey.
What?
They're tearing down the Hustler store. They're putting a whole bunch of hotels.
So you're saying that everything that made Hollywood,
Hollywood,
the Strip, Yeah. You know, the strip, the strip. Yeah.
They're going to strip.
They're going to strip that off the strip.
Yeah, they're going to take all the culture and all the vibe and all the, like, the raunchiness, but, you know, they're going to replace it with hotels that all look the same, and it's going to start looking like Las Vegas. I think it's a terrible thing, actually.
Here's a nice piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, I agree. I learn but, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you just have to, like, roll with the punches, you
know? I'm from Miami, and they did the same thing to South Beach. South Beach used to be, you know, kind of gritty, but it was cool to be there. You had models and just, like, the local. And then they just try to turn it into another. It's like this huge Universal shitty walk.
Oh, really?
Like, big hotels, big, you know, corporate entities coming in.
Yeah, like, the way I was pitched to me when I first went there was, like, it's like a Venice Beach, kind of.
Yeah.
And now it's... It's not like when I actually went there after people told me that, it wasn't like that to me.
Yeah.
But I heard it's even worse now.
It's all these gaudy clubs. And it's funny because I find, like, I live in Silver Lake, which used to be cool. Right. Now it's just kind of played out. But, like, especially like real estate and stuff like that gets so high.
Yeah.
That the only people that can afford to go there are the very same people that...
The bougie.
Yeah, right.
The bougie crowd.
Exactly. And there's, like, the same people that made it cool because they weren't there before. Right. So you just go ahead and ruin it.
Everything's in cycles, though. I think it'll always come back around, and hopefully we'll get some more artists living in those areas to kind of make it dope again. Speaking of artists, I think our first guest just walked through the door. We got Mr. Quincy Jones, awesome stand-up comedian.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
And music producer, right?
This is true.
I know I posted... a couple different things about Quincy Jones being on the show, and I know people are going to be tuning in like, dude, Quincy Jones is going to be on the show. You must get that a lot. I know you. I, like, oh my God, Quincy Jones is on the bill. And then you come and you're like, yo, it's me. And they're like, wait, this is like Quincy Jones circa 1962 or something. Like, yeah, you know.
This isn't who we expected.
So your real name is Quincy Jones.
Right.
That's the name your parents gave you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I like that. Were they a fan of Quincy Jones? Is that why they named you? Or were you named after some other relative that just happened to have the name?
From Seattle. So I was named after him. Actually, last name is Wallen, but my father's last name is Jones. So
okay.
It made it easy for me to just go by Quincy Jones.
That's so dope, man. That really is. I was telling some friends today that your website is... Not that QuincyJones.com.
That's not QuincyJones.com. Right.
That's awesome. That is one of the most hilarious websites I've seen out there. So tell us, like, how you got into comedy. You came from Seattle.
Right.
I saw you at the Ice House, and you were hilarious, man. I mean, honestly, that's part of the whole thing why we want to do this show is showcase comedians, musicians. We've had a huge lineup of musicians for the last, like, 5 weeks, and it's great to have – you're our first comedian on the new network, so super, super happy to have
you.
Man,
I'm honored.
I'm sure Eddie feels
– And he's like, damn it!
It's like, wait, am I not the first comedian on the show?
Well, but I mean, like, as a guest.
No, Eddie, we mean real comedians.
No, but I saw you. I saw your set, and I was like, man, this kid is hilarious, so – I went up to you afterwards, and it was really cool. I was kind of like just, you know, hanging about, and you were greeting everybody, and you were asking them, you know, what they felt about the show, like, not just your set, like, you were asking about other comedians. Mm-hmm. You were getting involved, and I was like, this cat's just with it. You just get it. Like, you understand it is about a connection with people, and it's like, it's about the experience. But more than that, your comedy is the shit, man, and that's one of the reasons I wanted you on the show. So tell us, like, how you got into comedy, what brought you to Los Angeles. Tell us how you got into it.
Man, I'm from Seattle. Shout out to Seattle. I moved down here in 2012, January 2012, and I was ready to get out of Seattle. You know, like, I just knew that I could do it. You know, if I just got to the next level, I would survive. You know, it's like, it's like people who make the jump early from, like, college or whatever, and they're like... And some people are like, hey, you jump too soon, but they end up doing fine.
Right.
But then it's like, if you're mentally prepared for it, then you'll do fine.
Right. Well, Seattle has a very good stand-up comedy scene.
Great comedy scene.
You got a lot of improv,
too, up there, I think, right?
Yeah, but it's the stand-up is, I mean, you got, like, Nick Thune is from there, Rick Kunkler.
Yeah, a lot of people. Rick Kunkler, Fahim Anwar, Jeff Dye, Adam Ray.
Yeah, Adam Ray.
And Andy Haynes, you know, a bunch of people from Seattle. We have a great crop.
That's awesome. And is there a vibrant comedy scene, like as far as clubs and the audience, like, you know, people really into it up there?
Yeah, people are into comedy. There's about as many clubs there as they are here. So, for example, you have Laughs Comedy Spot in Kirkland. You have the Parlor in Bellevue. You have the Seattle Comedy Underground, downtown Seattle. You got Tacoma Comedy Club. Then you got Grit City. So those are about five solid.
So did you kind of like play a lot of those clubs and you kind of were like, okay, I'm ready for Los Angeles, see what's out there?
No, man, I didn't play any clubs.
You were just like, that's it?
I was just like, I did it. I knew I was ready.
Okay.
I was like, I just got to get down there.
That's tight, man. That's ballsy. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do it. You got to get out there. I felt like when I moved from Seattle, it was like a, I'm going to die if I don't leave. Like, honestly, like I felt like I was Blood Diamond. I felt like I was Leo's character from Blood Diamond. I was like, my blood's going to spill in this soil. This rain feels
right,
soil.
Right.
So I was just like, I'm ready to get out. So, like, I just, you know, did what I got to do and saved money and loaded up my Honda Accord and boogied down here.
And I remember one of the things that one of the MCs said, they were like, you know, You're doing like 1,000 shows or something like that.
Year I did 1,000 sets in a year.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Tell me how you did that. Because like hustled. when I heard, I'm like, he's averaging 3 sets a day.
Just about 3 sets a day.
Yeah. That's like you're working every day, doing 3 sets every day.
You know, as a comedian, I think that for me, that's the hustle. Like, try to get up as often as you can. And it's not like a band where you got to set up and break down all the stuff. I mean, comedian, you just bring yourself.
But it's like you're going to have days where you just don't feel like doing it.
Boom.
You know what I mean?
Boom.
And that's when you have to do it. Like there are gigs, you know, it's funny. For me, like what I've experienced, like sometimes I'll be playing a huge festival. I played a huge festival in June, opening up for Ray LaMontagne, played in front of like 8,000 people. The next week, I was playing a shopping mall. And, like, that is what a musician's life is. It's like one day you're playing, and it happens on every level. John Mayer will play a huge stadium, and then he'll fly to Japan, and he'll play a room no bigger than this studio, you know? So sometimes it just works out that way, that you just have to deliver when the opportunity is not always the greatest opportunity, you know what I mean?
The opportunity isn't always visible either.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like you always got to be on. Like, I feel like L.A.'s taught me the business side of comedy, of show business, and I feel like I've learned how to find like a balance,
right?
You know, and I'm trying to let that transfer through other aspects of my life. But I really feel like here's like how to network without being slimy and fake,
right?
You know what I'm saying? How to be friendly without being, you know, overbearing. So
there's a weird thing about people from LA. I'm actually from Los Angeles, but I see that like there's a different vibe about people in Los Angeles than any other city, and it's not the most pleasant. I think it's I guess maybe people are protective of the city, or they're just like, you know, not as welcoming as maybe they are. Have you had that experience? Maybe both of you. This is a question for both of you.
Well, you know what I find? You're talking about networking and stuff like that, not seeming slimy. I think for comedians, it's a little easier because we're all in it together. And I think networking actually comes from, or not networking, but just kind of, yeah, networking. Comes from you and I hanging out and going to do spots together. And we sort of kind of build that relationship with each other because we see each other wherever we go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it just becomes this kind of camaraderie thing. And a lot of times, you know, hey, I got this show. Oh, I know this guy Quincy's really funny. You know, we should bring him in for that. And I think there's kind of an organic kind of, like, I don't know. Like, I know what you're feeling. Like, you don't want to go and kiss ass to, you know, the booker at the improv or the booker at the comedy store. But I think there's also a networking that just comes with just being friends with all your comic friends,
right?
and just kind of building that.
I mean, that's what I noticed in the comedy scene. Music's not so much like that, but it's similar in some ways. But
comedy is not like that. Comedy's not like that. I haven't experienced.
All right, give me the real. What do you? Like, what's your experience?
Like comedy is.
He's very cutthroat.
I know.
It is cutthroat, man. It is cutthroat. Comedians will slit your throat for 5 minutes in the show. Like, they will do that. Yeah, they'll just do that.
You've been hanging out at the store too much.
I'm everywhere, bro. I'm everywhere. I'm at improv store. Like, there are people who, like, have their cliques, you know? And, you know, there's friendships. There's camaraderie in that aspect. They'll sign each other up for open mics. But you still feel that underneath that camaraderie is, you know, that edge, that competitive edge.
Yeah.
And then that jealousy sometimes when you get on a show that they may not have gotten on a show yet, you know? So, like, if you were to tell someone, hey, I did this hot new show, you know, I did Best Fish Taco. And they're like, yeah, how'd you get on that? It's like...
Yeah, okay. Right.
Yeah,
you wait, someone's jealous of doing a show at a taco stand on Hillhurst?
You never know. It's like
hey, that's a good show.
See, that's when you were explaining the comedy scene to me, I'm like, most musicians aren't really like especially bands, they're not like that. Like I know for me, like I'm competitive. I've been competitive with sports or like academics or whatever it's been in my, you know, my youth. But now it's like when I play as a headliner, it's like I know that those, if you're a headliner, the openers are going to try to, you know, take you out. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to try to really win your fans to, like, go to them. So you got to bring it. And then there's that other flip side. Like, when I open for somebody, I want to play circles around them. I do. I want people to go, well, who was that? Yeah. You know what I mean? So I feel like bands are, like, super competitive. So, but there are, like, musicians and bands that, like, I'm friends with a lot of musicians, mm-hmm. you know? So there's, like, maybe let's say you're in a band and I respect what you do. I'm going to support your band and be like, dude, let's get you on a bill. Like, there is that camaraderie.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everyone, like, the whole entire stand-up, but you always find that one or two guys or a guy and a girl that you just like to travel with. And, you know, like, you book shows together and you just kind of run up and down the West Coast.
No, I've seen Dane Cook. Dane Cook brought three of his friends on the road with them.
Jay Davis.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're in that position, you're able to
when you're
do
in that,
that
position, exactly.
But and that's why I said, I think comedy, you have to learn that balance because naturally comedians are competitive too. You know, they want to outdo the headliner.
Right.
You know, but like then you also have to realize, I also want to work again.
Yes.
You know,
you got to be good, but not too good.
Exactly. So it's like I could just go real hard and stop just short of like, yo. Who is that? Like, that's why the hanging out afterwards. That's why the meeting people, talking people, finding out, you know, the general vibe of how everyone felt about the show. Because it's not there to stroke my ego. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Like, I'm good. You know?
Right.
But it's about, like, hey, you know, what do you think? Like, what can we do to improve on the show? Like, was there anything in particular that you didn't like? Tell that to producer know, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. So for me, that's where I come from.
I totally understand that. And I see your side too, Alex. Like I see both sides. But whenever I think about art, you know, especially for the first, I guess for me, for the first 10 years, it was super competitive. And now that I'm like kind of like a little bit more settled, it's like a lot of the bands that maybe I started came in with, mm-hmm. they're all done. They've all broken up. They toured, didn't make a living from it. They just, maybe it wasn't in their passions to do it. You know what I mean? It's like maybe some of them want to be actors. That happens too. Maybe they just want to be studio guitar guys. That happens. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like this fine line that you dance when everybody wants to do it at first, and then the people that are in there for the long haul, you start to see like that's how people get weeded out.
Yeah, I just honestly don't feel like I compete with it. I can't compete with the other guys. I'm on. I'm competing against myself.
Yes,
and trying to
that's essentially
me against the audience. Usually,
mm-hmm.
It's like okay, I got to win you guys over. I don't care what Quincy did before me. I'm not going to care what you know Eddie did after me. I just I have to be there, and then whatever happens, happens.
And are comedians, are you guys in your heads when you perform? Like, are you, like, in your heads when you're kind of, you go, Quincy.
Are you in your head?
So gracious. He's like, well, I'm the guest, but I'll pass it off to the host.
Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, somewhat, you know, like, I'm in the moment, but I clear my mind. You know, there's always that anxiety before, like, oh, snap, like, what if this doesn't work? Like, what if this is, like, what if the run stops here?
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
What if there's no magic? But then you also realize I practice for this moment.
Well, you did 1,000 shows.
You know what I'm saying?
So back to that real quick. So you did 1,000 shows. Mm-hmm. The shows that you didn't want to do, how did you just muster up? And how many shows were you doing a day on average?
I mean, I'd say 4 or 5.
Dang.
5 sets.
That's impressive. I mean, honestly, I don't know if I could do.
So what's a typical round for you on a night like that?
I mean, you know, it depends on how I'm feeling. Depends on what time I got off work. Depends on where I'm located at. Depends on there's a lot of factors. Like, the most times I ever got up in the night were 8. So, it was like,
And what time did you start and what time did you end?
4 to 2.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's dedication. Plus, you're driving to all these places or you're taking a train or whatever.
I'm biking.
Wow.
That's so it's like I'm biking, I'm busing, I'm training.
Wow.
So that's about where I was.
So at. The Honda Accord didn't quite make it to the club.
Honda Accord didn't make it past 6 months in this city. This city does everything it can to get rid of the weak in you, man.
Dude, that's a very real. It really is. That's a great way to look at the city. And you know what? For a long time, I didn't love the city for that. And now I like understand it. Okay. Like,
so there's a lot of bullshit. In.
Yeah. So that's okay.
It has to do like
all right, survival the
first
of the fittest.
Year, the first, exactly. Yeah, you can make it here. Like I honestly feel confident that if I moved to New York, I could thrive there because I moved here right. and I understood what it's like to be truly alone.
Right.
Because I don't have family here. Right. You know, my nearest family member is 1,100 miles away.
Right.
You know. So for me, it was like I just dug down. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Holidays hit. You getting lonely. You grip harder, you know, you just hit that scene. And I felt like that's why I did 1,000 sets was to really just have a goal, a lofty but attainable goal, you know. So 1,000 sets is like, all right, that averages out to 3 a night. I could do that. Now, when I set the goal, I didn't anticipate all that came with it.
Right, of course.
Such as not feeling like going up, such as, you know, distance, signing up, going to mics, having them end. You know, there's that. You had your heart center.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you get there, like, oh, we just finished. It's like, oh. And then, you know, you got to head back to the spot that you left to get there. And then, you know, it's stuff like that. So it was.
You think you'd do it like that again?
I was thinking about it. I was thinking.
You're dedicated, man.
You know, what's weird is that last year was the only year that could really happen because there was enough stage time.
Right.
Now I've seen mics go, you know, fade, shows fade. And it's now it's like, okay. Now what, you know? So maybe next year, I don't know, I might have a new goal. I might do that again. I might add that to the repertoire.
What about you, Alex? Do you get in your own head when you're performing?
I'll tell you, the day after Robin Williams died, I was hosting at Lovett's. I was doing a show, and I thought, oh, I'm going to pay tribute to Robin Williams, so I'm completely going to improvise my set.
Oh, wow.
And I got past the first joke, and the audience was just pan-faced, nothing. That's actually a lot louder than it was at the club. It's mostly tourists, like a bunch of people in jorts sitting at John Lovett's, and they weren't having it. And so I got in my head, like, shit, you know, I started to panic. And I'm like, where do I go now? So eventually I just went back to some of the material that I know that works.
Right.
And I was able to get him back. But after that, it was hard. You know, like sometimes you don't want to get back on stage. I'm hosting, so I have to keep going back on that stage.
You have to keep facing them.
They hated me. I was like, oh, God, this night cannot be over soon enough.
Now, Quincy, who are some of your favorite comedians that, like, influenced you, that made you want to do it?
You know, is when people ask that, I feel like that's when someone asks who your favorite musician or rapper is. Because you're always going to list the greats. You're going to, Led Zeppelin and Metallica.
Yeah, but I notice is like people will have different influences.
Right.
Like I could ask Alex the same question. I could ask 5 different comedians the same question. And they'll say like, oh yeah, I like blah, 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 blah. I like Sam Kinison. Oh, I didn't hear that the last time somebody said. So like, give me 5 of your biggest influences.
Ooh, Nate Bargatze.
See, that's a name I haven't even heard of.
Yeah, Nate Bargatze, Roy Scovel, Brent Morin, Andy Haynes. Who would be the 5th one? Byron Bowers.
Wow.
So
nice.
These are all people, and I'm in a fortunate position because they're all here,
right?
And I know them all, and they all know me.
That's awesome.
We've never really done a show together, you know.
I mean, it's time. You got time,
right? But you know, I'm fortunate enough that I could reach out to them and talk to them, and you know, get gems from them because all these guys have Conan appearances, multiple, some of them, you know. So all these guys are touring headliners. They go out there, you know. So it's kind of cool in that regard. I like that.
You just mentioned 5 comics that I've never heard of.
You never heard of Rory Scovel, Nate Bargatze, Brent Morin.
Now I may have seen them. Like if I've seen that, like I may have seen them in a movie, or I may have seen them on Conan. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, man. See, that's why I asked this question, because that's one of the fascinations for me doing this show. It's like, I know musicians, I know bands, mm-hmm. and when people list things, it's like, I know them. But comedy is one of the things that I'm fascinated about. I absolutely love comedy. It's one of my favorite things to go do, you know, is to go sit in a comedy club and just watch comedians make people laugh, or watch like comedies, movies, etc.
Bless your heart.
No, that's what it's about, man. Honestly, it's
we need more people like you. You hear that, comedy gods? You hear that, comedy gods?
Dude, laughing is like what I love more than music, to be honest. Because it's like, even when it hurts, it's because it's just so good, you know? Music is like that, but man, when it's so good, sometimes it can hurt. Like, oh man, it hurts like in a painful way because it's just so beautiful and overwhelms you. And it's a beautiful thing too, but when you laugh and it hurts, it's because, my God, that thing was so funny that you couldn't just, you cannot think about anything else, you know? It's just one of those things. So are you performing a lot in Los Angeles?
I'm fortunate that when you that we're doing this show, I actually do have something to report.
Oh, let's hear. If you
did what we originally planned, I'd be like, nope, don't have anything planned. Next question, back to you.
Before we were on this network, we had some guests, like, you know, that they would say, you know, we're like, oh, so you're performing? They're like, actually, I'm not a comedian. I'm something else. Like, somebody got wind that they should be on this show, and we didn't know who they were, so we're like, yeah, sure, we'll entertain it. Right. And we're like, great, we got nothing to talk about. You got nothing going on. All right.
What do you tweet?
All right. What's yeah, exactly. On? Where do you go from there? So tell us, where are you performing? What clubs or what showcases? What's going on?
Man, I'm going to be at Flappers on Thursday, September 19th.
That's in Burbank?
Yeah, Flappers in Burbank. Okay. Thursday. September 19th, I'll be at the Hollywood Hotel doing a Performing Under the Influence show, and then I'll also be in Ventura that night doing a show there. I got a couple other shows. I gotta check my calendar, check Facebook. But
yep, that's all right.
Yeah.
That's,
oh, and last Saturday of the month, I'm at Groundworks Coffee and on Sunset and Cahuenga doing the Cup of Comedy show there. September. Oh yeah, I'll be in the Orlando Independent Comedy Festival. That's awesome. September 25th to the 29th.
That's always fun when you fly across the country to do your thing.
It is always fun when you do that. And then I'll also be in Morty's in Indianapolis in the first week of October.
You got a lot going on, man.
I just said he's going to break the record this year.
Hey, man.
I'm doing a marathon in the middle of that.
Then I'm doing my first 5K. There's a mic at the end of that. And then
riding his bike to Orlando.
Yeah, dude, make me feel lazy. I'm like, I got like 4 shows in the next 2 months. That's it.
Man.
You're like, I got, I'm booked till 2017. I got to get to work, man.
I wish. Like I told you, we'd done this 2 weeks ago. Never. There'd be nothing to report.
Now, when you come off doing 1,000 shows in a year, like, when you, even if you're doing like that many shows, there's got to be a part of you that's like, man, I feel lazy. Even when you're doing that many shows.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, when I started, I was doing 6 shows a week. Uh-huh. That's what was like pretty normal for me.
Right.
And now it's like, I do maybe 1 every 2 weeks, you know what I mean? Just to make sure I'm still sharp,
but you're
still
going.
But I'm comfortable, and I like to. And what I notice is, like, I make those shows count more in a way that's different than, you know, just like throwing like shows everywhere I can just to get the band tighter, to get me tighter, you know what I mean? But yeah, I miss that in a way, and I'm also comfortable not doing that at the same time. So my question to you, after doing 1,000 shows, which I've never done, I think the most I've done is like 200, 300 in a year, but at 1,000 shows, when you're doing as many, even in the dates that you just mentioned, how does that make you feel? Are you just like, man, I'm glad I'm not doing it like I was?
Nah, man, I feel lazy. I feel lazy because, like, I always feel like, damn, dog, like, there's somebody out there who's writing a joke, getting that joke ready quicker, that's going to be in a show, that's going to get them discovered, get them signed, and this, that, and third.
Right.
And so in my head, so when you ask me, am I in my own head? Yeah, but not before showtime.
Right.
Like, I'm in my own head anytime I'm not on stage.
Well, that's, I think, every artist, you know, it's like you know, there's that phrase, you're only as good as your last gig.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for me, sometimes, you know, like, I've headlined the House of Blues a lot. And when I started, I was telling a good friend of mine, I would play that club, and that high would last me a month and a half. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, I played that huge club. There were lots of people. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Now that high Then it became like 2 weeks. Then it became like a week. Now that high lasts 2 days. And then I'm like, what's going on next? What's the next thing? Where am I going to get my next fix? You know what I mean?
And that, my friend, is exactly what this year was about, was the next goal.
Yeah.
So the next goal, what for me, was to do more festivals, to go out, network, make, you know, do more festivals, go on the road more.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate that Bobby Lee took me on the road with him. You know, that was an amazing feeling.
How'd you meet him? Just in the scene or the past?
You know what? I met his girlfriend, and his girlfriend said I was funny at a mic, and she vouched for me when he needed a feature. And he's like, all right, I didn't know who you were. My girl vouched for you, and I'm glad that you came. I'm glad that you were funny. You did
it. That's awesome.
And so it really pays to just be out there, be nice, work hard, be kind. Yeah. You know? Like, I feel like there's never been an ending to a story where someone worked hard and didn't get something at the end of it.
That's very true.
Like, so, like, what are we worried about? Now, for me, my next goal was this year, because you don't want to get to the end of your goal and be like, well, what's next? You don't want to get to that what's next. You need to have that ready.
Yeah.
So when I finished 1,000, it was like, take a breather, kick back. All right, cool. Now we need to start working on an hour. Now we need to compile all these jokes that I wrote through the course of the year.
And you started at what, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
Yeah, starting at 5, 10 minutes, you know.
That's
jokes
crazy.
That I was ready to burn, you know, jokes that, you know, I could build on. And I never throw anything away. There's always something you could build on with it at a later date.
Right.
You know, I always write it down in my notebook. So for me, it was like, okay, now I want to build an hour. Now I want to put out an album. Now I want to put out a DVD. Now I want to do all these things. So that for me, and I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet, but we did, me and my friend Sam J, my videographer, we did a Through the Lens documentary about me doing 1,000 sets.
Wow, that's cool.
So that's going to be dropping around Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So we're going to be doing that.
Very cool. Do you have any clips? Do you have any clips we can play for you on the show?
Yeah.
Let's play some stuff. Can you get online and look up, go on YouTube?
I think so.
Yes, you can. We promise. All right, what should we look up if we go on YouTube? You got it?
Man, here we go.
Just go look up Quincy Jones comedy. You search Quincy Jones comedy.
Let's try this. I didn't know I was going to do all this technical stuff.
I know,
today.
Dude. I'm throwing you. I'm slapping you around.
So nobody's
from Miami?
Yeah.
What part?
Coral Gables.
Oh, I grew up in Kendall.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, yeah. Ken, I went to Killian High School for
15 years. Okay, yeah, I went to Coral Gables High School.
Yeah.
Nice. You over by, trying to think, like 120, 130 something.
98.
Killian 98. High School sounds dangerous.
Killian High School was the biggest school I ever been to. I mean, besides college, it was 4,000 kids.
Dude, that's what my graduating class was, 3,200.
Jeez.
My graduating class was.
Shout out
900.
To the dropouts. Shout out.
No,
to
but
the
most
dropouts.
People don't go to schools like that. So it's. I think that teaches you more than anything, you know, how to adapt. You getting it?
Yeah, I got Quincy at Flappers and Quincy at something else.
Best fish taco? Do you see that?
Oh, you want to see fish tacos?
No, best fish taco. Yeah, you just search Quincy Jones comedy, and a bunch of my clips should show up.
We're gonna play some stuff.
Yeah, I got at the Meltdown with Jonah.
Yeah, you could do that.
Let's play that.
This is really interesting. He's trying to do 1,000 shows in 1 year. This, yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, I don't think I've done 1,000 shows in my life. This is his 725th show right now. Let's make it an awesome one. Please welcome to the stage, Quincy Jones!
Yeah.
Oh, man. God, it's so good to be here, guys. A lot of white people. Oh, man, a lot of white people. Gonna come right out and say it. I love white people. I do. They invented brunch. So it's a good thing. Keep it up, white people. Late breakfast? What? Oh, no. Some of my white friends are full of crap, I'll tell you that much. Like when I go wine tasting, you know? As if you go wine tasting with any other type of friends, right? We're wine tasting with some of my white friends, and the sommelier asked my white friend Jason, he's like, Jason, what do you taste? And he's like, I taste floral notes and hints of honey and cloves in the Mediterranean grape region. And they're like, Quincy, what do you taste? I was like, red. Red, wine, emotions, right? Now I'm kind of drunk. Kind of drunk right now. Don't even know why I'm here.
I do like to drink. I don't like to drink and get phone numbers, though. That's dangerous. Because I get drunk and I forget the person's name and I label them in my phone as a place that I remember. Today, I went through my phone. There's a girl called McDonald's Hookup Chick. It's serious, yeah. And I'm kind of confused. I don't know. I don't know if I met her at McDonald's and we hooked up, or if she works at McDonald's and she hooks it up. Either way, I win. I love McChicken as much as I love sex. So, you guys, I'm tired of.
That was awesome. That was totally awesome. I'm clapping it out. Seriously, man, that was some funny shit. I mean, I don't know if we had the mics muted. We probably did.
Yeah.
But I was laughing my ass off, dude. McDonald's hookup chick.
Yeah, I like that one.
So let me ask you a question. Like, when you're writing stuff, like, are you like an observer? Are you thinking things constantly of past experiences? Are you thinking of funny things in your imagination? Like, what are you kind of, what are you taking it from?
Okay. All the above, observations, it all sort of, you know, collides together. Observations, your brain's constantly going to see the funny in the observations, right? And then you go on stage and you work out the observations. Sometimes it doesn't work out like you expect it to.
Right.
You know? But then if it doesn't work out like you expect it to, don't scrap it. It just may not be done yet. You might be missing something,
right.
You know? Sometimes some people walk up to you and give you a tag, and we're all sort of protective of our material. You
of course.
Know, that's like saying something like, hey, you got if you play like Kid G, you know,
yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, bro. I've been doing this more than a couple of times, you know? Right. You got to be able to accept that feedback, mm-hmm. You know? You have to learn how to glean the good from the bad. So I'm always open to tags, and, you know, and sometimes I've used some tags that really made my joke go sky high, you know? So... other than that, like, I do it all.
Man. That's awesome. Yeah, no, I always wondered, like, it's such a fascinating thing for me because, you know, with music, you can only, you know, use so many chords.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many things you can kind of, like, you know, use as the foundation for what you're going to write about.
Mm-hmm.
So with comedy, it's almost like it's so easy for somebody to steal a joke or, like, it's so easy for somebody to see something and just say, oh, I could use that and use that as... a joke that they create. So I always wonder what the process is for comedians because when inspiration hits, it's like, are you like talking into a microphone? Are you writing it down
I write it in my notepad right here.
Okay.
On my phone. I write it down here and I get, then I was just telling my friend this today. I think of it. I write it down here in the notepad. I take it on stage. I work through it. Then I try it out at a show. You know, and then if it works, then I put it in the physical notebook and under the set list, the club set list. So I have different set lists for different, venues and whatnot. Sometimes you get a bar show, you can't do the club set list at a bar show.
Right.
I can't do, you know, family-friendly comedy at a bar show. You know, I can't do a bar show material at a family-friendly comedy thing.
Right.
So you got to find, you know, you got to find a well-rounded
balance. So you have your ammunition.
Oh, yeah. Got my hollow tips.
You're like, this is the no-swear set.
That's what I have. I have, you know, safe jokes. Like, and if someone steals my jokes, they're written in such a way that I don't think they could really deliver unless they, like, practice it. And then people would be like, well, I know that that's someone else's. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, unless it's something. And then I also try and write about such obscure things that people won't really be able to steal it. You know? If you're writing about, you know, a Kim Kardashian joke, yeah, someone's going to steal it. If you're going to write about, a Miami joke, someone in Florida might steal a Miami joke. But if you're writing about you going to Miami hoping to see the filming of Bad Girls Club, then no one's going to have that joke.
Right.
That's your experience.
Right.
So I write about my experiences.
I think that's the best way to write, period. You know, it's like... that's what makes things funny, you know.
Well, you write about how you feel because you're a musician.
Yeah, I write about how I feel, and I also write about things I observe.
Right.
But either way, it's an experience. Mm-hmm. The only time I've ever had to write in a way that was totally different, I've had to that show Desperate Housewives. They asked me to write a song for a female artist to sing on a record, and to write it from a female perspective of a character in the show. So that, I was like, okay, I have to write this from a woman's perspective. And in that regard, it's like you almost feel like an actor. Like, you're just shifting gears into a different mindset. Like, you're into a different character, and you have to write from that perspective. So that's the only time I've had to do something like that. What about you, Alex? When you write, are you kind of an observer? Are you thinking, like, silly little one-liners?
It depends. You know, I have a couple different writing jobs. I write for a show called Celebrity 60, which is kind of like the E! Talk Soup.
Right.
Where it's a couple of, like, quick two-liners of celebrities. So I have to kind of think in that fashion. But for my own personal stand-up, I write what I feel.
What you think is going to be funny.
Like, the other day, I saw this guy sitting on an escalator going down. I'm like, how lazy can you be? That's the laziest thing I've ever seen
in my life.
That's true. You know, I can see that, and I'll kind of incorporate. But I'm the opposite of Quincy. Like, I write, like, on my notebook first.
Right.
Work it, and then if it makes the set list, it goes to my phone, because that's what I bring on stage with me.
Oh, so you can use that as a reference.
It's funny that you say that you do it the other way. You actually physically.
Well, that's what's great about art. It's like everybody has a different process, you know.
Plus, I write a lot fast. Like, my thinking process is sometimes so fast that if I sit there and try to type, I'll forget half the joke.
Right. So you have to just, like, get it out.
Yeah.
Let's play something else of Quincy's. Can we something on another clip of yours?
What do we got? Yeah. Will you
another?
Why don't you type in Quincy Jones Skullfest?
Quincy Jones Skullfest.
I think Skullfest is two separate words, not one.
I love this. You know, some comedians don't want their stuff played. They just want to come and hang. But, man, I feel like let the people that are listening, they're going to want to hear some jokes.
Yeah.
If you're a comedian, you know, like, they're going to hear jokes in the conversation. But it's like, it's so great to see somebody's polished stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love that. You got it?
Got it.
All right, let's hear it. Here's Quincy Jones, Skullfest.
As I get older, I find myself doing a lot of white people things. I like brunch, but the whiter thing that I do is I write a Yelp review about the brunch I went to. Getting old sucks. It sucks. It just creeps up on you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're chilling one day. I didn't know I was old until the NBA season started, and I found myself a fan of Spurs basketball. Yeah, like when I was 20, I was like, boo, they're boring. And now I'm 30, I'm like, good team play. Good job. Good job. Look at that flash. Keep going. You drinking, Big Dog? What you drinking? You're going to lie to me. Anybody's drinking? This is, I ordered it. liquor. Angry Orchard. I'm drinking. Huh? Hot Planters? I don't know what the hell you're saying, man. Huh? It's a local brew? All right, calm down. I got a joke. he's giving me the history. It's a local brew. Started in 2002. Great. No hops. No hops, okay? It's so excellent. I love it. Starts out in East Atlanta. Great little local brewery. Am I right? Yeah.
I will never write a Yelp review and never think that I'm not white now.
Yeah, boy. Dominating the Yelp review joke material game.
So where can people find you? What's your, like, the best way? What's the website? One more time for
That's
all
not
listeners.
QuincyJones.com. That's not QuincyJones.com.
And you spell it just like Quincy Jones. Q-U-I-N-C-Y-J-O-N-E-S.
No K-W-I-N-C-Y. Yes. Q-U-I-N-C-Y-J-O-N-E-S. .com. That's not QuincyJones.com. You have I have videos up there. I also, you can contact me, Twitter, email.
Is all your Twitter all the same, or you just go to the hub? Go to the website and you'll
go to the website. Okay. And you can find a link right there. It's all right there.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And
I don't tweet much.
You know what? I hate doing it.
All
right. I had to link my Twitter to my Facebook to, like, show that, okay, I'm doing more stuff. Like, because my Facebook is, it's got my friends and my family, people I've grown up with. It's like talking to your crew, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then
right.
some other strangers that happen to hear the stuff that you're talking about. But Twitter, it's a whole bunch of people that you don't really give a shit about that, like, apparently want to know about what you're doing because it has to do with what they're doing, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, that's cool.
Twitter is like the face of the internet, if that makes sense. Like, you really, Like, you tweet something, and it goes out. Like, you don't feel like you're on the internet when you're on Facebook. You're right. Like, oh, I'm friends, family. Or you go to a website that you go to all the time. You go to your email. You go to, but Twitter, you get on Twitter, you're just tweeting shit out to the space. And then people are like, I like that. And they're like, hey, you're like, who are you? Why are you commenting? I said this joke about an R&B singer, and you're defending. Get out of here. Get out of my
face. Who let you into this place?
Yo, this is the internet, man. You better open
and up. Dude, I refuse to hashtag. I will never hashtag for the rest of my life. I never will.
One called Free Game.
Free Game?
Free Game.
What is it?
That's a hashtag.
That's game. It? What does it mean?
It just means I'm giving out free game. That's mine. No one's got that. Hashtag free game. Yeah.
You hashtag, Alex? Yeah, I can tell you hashtag. I know you. I can just tell
when I'm alone by myself.
Oh, that's the best time to do it.
I can't do it. I'm like, I look at it and I go, this is ridiculous. This is so ridiculous. I can't like mention what's trending for what's trending so it can be trendy.
I'm a Twitter whore. Like, I'll go out and tweet. If I don't get at least a couple of likes and a couple of retweets, I'm like, oh, I'm a failure. I'm never retweeting again.
That makes me want to punch myself in the face. Every time I tweet, I just want to punch myself in the face straight up. I want to blow that shit up. Yeah.
I was waiting for that sound effect to drop. I saw him fidgeting with the button.
You're like, oh, where is it? Where is the explosion? Where is it? All right, we're going to put it to rest. Quincy Jones, thank you so much for being a guest on our show. Me, dude, we'll have you back.
We got to go do
after you do another 2,000 shows.
See you next year.
Quincy Jones, Alex Dominguez, correct?
Yes, Alex Dominguez 3 at Twitter.
Yeah.
Follow me there.
All right. You can follow me. I don't even know my own Twitter. Maybe it's at NKBand. Maybe it's at NK21. I don't know. One of the two.
I don't follow you.
So go fuck yourself. I'm blowing this shit up. That's it. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. One for you, Alex. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.